everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. If you want to go to their conference, it'll be in September. It's time to think about signing up now. Yeah, it is. Why not? Why not? Go to pnwa.org and learn about it. Okay. Hey, listen. Wow, what a great conversation with Eileen Garvin. She's got a book coming out. It'll be dropping today, Tuesday, April 30th, Crow Talk. We agreed on so much. She's really cool. We had a great conversation about book clubs, about memoir, about deciding to write, and about what it takes to be a writer. Yeah, about being able to close the door and draw boundaries with your partner, whoever that person may be. So if you aren't familiar, Eileen Garvin, she's the author of the national best-selling novel, The Music of Bees, that came out in 2021, and the acclaimed memoir, How to Be a Sister. Crow Talk's her latest novel. And yeah, cool woman, great conversation. Glad I get to share it with you. Enjoy. All right, look who it is. It's Eileen Garvin. Eileen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. As we talk, now we're talking a few days before, but when our listeners get to hear this, your book, Pro Talk, I'm trying to remember.
Pro Talk,
just published. It'll be your pub date. So right now, you're in that strange pre-publication, although the book starts appearing here and there. Is what my memory of the last time I published a book is it sort of doesn't really drop on the day, does it? It kind of...
Well, it trickles out roll. There, right? And yeah. This is part of Bookstagram and all the online reviewers. What is different from the olden days is that if you're a librarian or a bookseller or just popular on Instagram, you can get a review copy, an advanced reading copy. I think those were sent out in the fall. So people have been reading the uncorrected proof, but the actual book comes out on next Tuesday.
Yeah. So how do you feel? How do you feel about it? Are you in the hating it stage or the loving it somewhat conditionally? How are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling pretty good. I feel really happy. I love every part of this business, even though at heart, I prefer to be alone in this room that we're in, roughly with the lights lower, doing the work. But the public facing part of it is also gratifying. And what's especially exciting for me this time is that my first novel came out during COVID. So this was what the book launch was like, which was thank goodness we had it. But I'm the difference is I'm going to be having a big party next week in my hometown, and then I get to go on tour and talk to people face to face, and I'm very excited about that.
I know I had a book come out, a book I love that came out right in the teeth of COVID, I got to have a book launch where people from my hometown of Providence zoomed in, and you know, but
yeah,
it is
not the same.
No, not even. No. But it still became a national bestseller.
Congratulations!
You. Mine didn't, sadly, but thank you. But yours, The Music of Bees, something had to be, and yours was.
Yes, it did. It became a national bestseller, and that was unexpected and thrilling.
Maybe we're going to back up eventually. I keep planning to, but I wonder how many books, because I know some other people whose books did really kind of came out and did great in COVID. I always wonder how much they were the kind of medicine people were uniquely looking for at that moment, or just that had nothing to do with it.
That's what I hear from people, the medicine part.
Yeah.
Of course, as you know, when you're writing, you have no preconceived notions about what the book's going to end like, or who's going to read it, or if it's even going to get published, right? So it's not like I had a preconceived sense of I'm going to write a cheerful book because everyone will be miserable, because I started writing it in 2016. And
when things maybe you weren't feeling so hopeful at that moment for
maybe not. But by the time the book came out, right? It was right in the thick of the second year of people being cut off from each other. And I do a lot of book clubs. What I love about
Nice.
Zoom is I can do book clubs all over the country. I've done over 100 book clubs at this point. And people tell me, always tell me, one of the participants will say, your book gave us was so hopeful in a time that was difficult, and difficult times continue. So it seems to just continue to resonate with people. And that makes me, it's really gratifying to hear.
Listen, authors, listen to me. Now I'm going to talk to you. I'm not talking to Eileen because she's
Okay.
just giving you said there's nothing wrong with giving your readers some hope.
Right.
I know the tragic arc can seem so important, and there's a place for it. But I don't know anyone on earth who doesn't want to feel a little hopeful about tomorrow, about themselves. And so good for you. And so, hey, now a practical question. I'm always curious about this because I've never done a I because my stuff has been books for creative people and so on. But I'm kind of moving in a different direction now. And when you do book clubs, what do you do? Like when you zoom in, I assume you're just zooming in. Maybe you
Yes.
do
Yes.
you pour a glass of wine for yourself with them, or do you, but when you zoom in, what do? Do you read it? Do you just take their questions? How does that go?
More of a conversation. The reading, I don't think I've ever done a reading. What I tend to do is I will let the host know in advance, hey, I'm happy to do whatever you want with this time.
Okay.
So if you want to just jump right in with questions, we can do that. If you want me to talk a little bit about where the book came from and my writing process, I can do that. And it's pretty fun. I mean, these book clubs just blow my mind. These people, some of them have been meeting for 30 years.
What?
Yeah, for 30 years they've been getting together. Like typically they met as when they had young kids in school at the same time,
Right.
and they've just stayed connected. Others started during COVID, which is a whole nother layer of interesting of connection. So yeah, I just tell them I will do what they want with the time, and people just love that they just have questions, they want to talk, and so it's very fluid.
Okay, last question about book clubs. I don't know why I'm so interested, but maybe I'm psychic for some reason and it's important to me. What is the average size? What's the smallest you've ever been willing to do? And what is the largest that you've ever zoomed into?
Oh, average, I would say it's about 10.
Oh, that big. See, I was going to say like
Yeah.
7 to 8, but 10's the average.
Nope,
That's pretty good.
10's average. Small is 6. And the largest, that's a good question. I've done a couple formats where they're all together in a room
Yeah.
and I'm the only one on the screen. And that can be a little bit, technically, there's a little bit of a delay,
Right.
but of course, people want to be together, so that's good too.
Yeah.
And I would say some of those have been about 30 people.
See, now I was only picturing you zooming into a living room somewhere, but no, it's a virtual. Well, do they normally meet together and then for this event they all zoom?
It's evolved. So during COVID, obviously, it was just Zoom.
Right.
And then it started changing where they said, oh, well, we're meeting in person. Can we have you come still? And I said, great. So they set me up on one screen.
Right.
Technological hack. Don't let people be on multiple devices. It creates this like terrifying screamy noise, like on Star Trek. That if you don't cut that off at the beginning, it's just
Right.
terrible for everybody. So it's been a hybrid.
All right.
And
Okay.
when I'm in town, when I'm in I live in a small town, so I don't get a lot of
Right.
invitations, but I love to meet with people in person as well.
All right. Well, that is awesome. Okay. And last though, I'm gonna guess the ratio of women to men is like 9 to 1 at best. If
Yeah.
that okay.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. So for your other authors that are listening that haven't done this yet, put it on your website. Say, invite me to your book club, and it will happen from there. Book club people are getting really savvy that this is something they can do, and it's
Yeah.
a wonderful way to connect. It doesn't maybe it costs me an hour of my time, but if I have that, I'm happy to give it.
You know, also, it's like if you've written a book, we don't get to. I was just talking to a client, but I had met her, but I just met her for the first time. And the kind of work I do tends to draw clients who get inspired by something I've done. And she's like, you don't know the effect you've had, Bill. Like, you don't. And I'm like, it's true. I don't know. And so for authors, you don't get to really feel the love all the time. Like, you
Right.
don't. It's
It's
all so
true.
distant. And so how
It
nice to
is.
actually talk to some people who've read the book and want to talk
Yeah.
to you about it.
Yeah.
All right. So
So this is 2024, novel number two, book number three. The first book came out in 2010, How to Be a Sister. That was a memoir. Okay, so 2010 is your first book, but I know writers, you've been writing a long time. You had to have been writing before then, before How to Be a Sister, you had to have been writing something, or maybe not.
Not really. That was my first
Boy,
try.
really?
I was working as a reporter before
Ah,
then, but I
ah.
really came to writing in a circuitous, bumbling fashion. I was an English major, and people ask this question, how did you become a writer, or when did you know that's what you wanted? And I find it a difficult question to answer because I grew up as an avid reader, and I suppose I thought, well, doesn't everybody want to be a writer? Because it's the coolest thing ever, but nobody asked me. I didn't grow up in a generation of children where parents sat you down and talked about your hopes and dreams and plans. I was just a Catholic kid in a big family, and I got an education and I got an English degree, and it was just a different time. So I think secretly I probably it was it would have seemed like a dream. It still seems like a dream to have been able to do this, but I didn't pursue creative writing classes. I didn't do my MFA. I went from English major to one writing adjacent job after another, and then accidentally got a newspaper job in between my master's and PhD in grad school, dropped out of grad school, and have been writing ever since.
What were you getting your PhD in?
English.
Oh, okay. Right.
So
Okay.
practical. And I didn't really have a direction, and I loved my master's work. I read some fascinating books, mostly 19th century literature, but American and Mexican American. But it kind of ruined the I realized it was ruining the fun of reading for me. I got to the end of the 2 years and I was just reading Beowulf for the fourth time for some class, and it just seemed like the wrong path for me. And the newspaper job was a great hijack.
My take on studying literature, maybe it's a hot take, but is that I started studying it when I was 18. I went to college and I knew I wanted to be a writer. Like that was like the arts were the only real, but I was a reader. And my feeling is I started reading it, and this is not a knock on my friends who are PhDs and English teachers, but I kind of thought, well, I don't know. I like it, but that's my opinion. I don't really want to talk about it beyond like it had this effect on me, and I don't care what else it means other than this is what it meant to me in this moment. It was kind of hard for me to talk beyond that, about what it meant to somebody else, and like I didn't care really in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you probably don't have a book club.
No. I wouldn't know what to do with it, because I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You think that? I don't care.
I know. I feel the same way. I in terms of I have a checkered past with book clubs, and I just joined a new one, and they're lovely. But I feel like there's a certain amount of that you can talk about. We can agree what the book was about. We can agree what the writer's other history is. I liked it, you didn't. Why? I mean, I guess that's okay. It's like a reason to socialize with people,
It
but
is. It's a reason, but I will tell you, it's a slippery slope because I have my friends, I see them and they like talk about movies, among other things, because that's something they can quickly all see and agree on. And I know my own take on things. I am super fussy. The older I get, the fussier I get. I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not. And they all these like these things. I'm like, it's great. They love it, but I can't do if there's people getting shot all the time, I can't do it.
Oh,
So I just can't do it.
I know.
Assassinations, I can't do it. Executions, I can't do it. But they like it. And so I can't tell them not to like it, but I can't watch it, So anyway. All right. So you're doing journalism. That's your gateway drug to the mainline stuff of fiction, well, creative nonfiction first. Talk to me about the moment you said, I'm going to try writing this memoir because memoir is edging up to fiction. Let's be real, it's in the vicinity for sure.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
So to go from so reporting, which let's call that creative nonfiction, to dabbling at memoir, which is maybe we don't call reporting creative nonfiction.
I don't wouldn't call report it's not supposed to be.
So reporting to creative nonfiction. And so what happened there was I was working full time as a managing editor at a weekly newspaper, and I was starting to cover some beats that interested me. And then I was in New Mexico. I moved to Oregon, to this town I live in now that has a population of about 7,500 people.
Ooh,
And
all right.
it was 2005, and not a robust job market for English majors or writers. And this was before remote work was common. And
Right.
so I started freelancing. And at the time, I thought, oh, that sounds so romantic. I'm going to freelance. You know, that sounds so jet-setty. What that really means is that you're chronically underemployed, right? So I was pitching and writing for any small outlet between here and Portland,
Yeah.
which is the closest big city. But what that left me with was lots of free time. And in that free time, I started exploring this area. I live in the Columbia River Gorge. There's lots of hiking and mountain biking, and I think this may speak to you as a writer. A lot of the writing comes when you're not sitting down at the computer,
Of
right? When you're
course.
out in the woods and
Yes.
walking the dog and what have you. So that's when I started thinking about these stories about How to Be a Sister is about my childhood growing up with a sibling with severe autism and my journey to reconnect with her as an adult. And so my sister's autism, let me just kind of contextualize it, was diagnosed in the 70s when most people didn't know what it
There was
was.
no such thing practically.
No, there was
Practically.
not a lot of help for the family in terms
No,
of how
no.
to, each stage of life.
Yeah.
And my sister Margaret's autism is characterized by pretty severe communication difficulties. And she would have these terrible meltdowns in public, but she was also hilarious. So it was this,
Right.
I call it the mad tea party of our childhood, because you never knew what she was going to do. And we were always kind of on the edge of like heartbreak or laughter
Right.
because it's just cuckoo. And so I had these stories, many of these stories that I began with, I had been carrying around for decades that we'd laughed about in the family and shared with each other about things that happened at weddings and funerals and
Yeah.
at the old spaghetti factory. So
Right.
there's that. But then within that, there had to be this narrative arc that is more fictional in nature, as you
Yeah.
noted. So the thread there was these stories, but then it was me in the present moment thinking about what's our relationship going to be like now as adults. What are my obligations? What are my fears? How can I try to reconnect with Margaret? Because she's the kind of person that she doesn't like to talk on the phone. She doesn't
Right.
write letters.
Yep.
She doesn't Zoom,
Nope.
and she can't travel by herself. So time with Margaret is in person, and
Yep.
that is hard to accomplish all the time. So anyhow, that's how to Be a Sister came to be.
I see. Well, so in my last book actually dealt somewhat with raising a kid on the spectrum, although it was for writers. And so while he was not as intense as your sister, the so much is familiar that you're describing that I went through as a parent. And
Oh, your own child. Yes, yeah, so I'm sure we've swum in the same waters.
So
Yeah.
yeah, yours sounds more intense, but it's still the sort of, especially around the public stuff and the kind of and the communication stuff, it's all very familiar. But I always say I learned so much from it. It was so transformative. Okay,
Oh, yeah.
but this is all the past. So you publish a novel in the middle of COVID.
Yes.
11 years later, you started 6 years later, but okay. Did you try to write an this was that was the Music of Bees. Did you try to start one before the Music of Bees and go, this isn't working, or was that the first
I
novel you
started
sat down?
something else around a couple of years later. I got a full-time job, which really screwed things up.
Oh, what a terrible
That
idea.
was
Why'd
like
you
the
do
death
that?
knell. I don't know.
You needed money. I know you're
I needed
bored.
money, and yes, so I took this job, and it was really fun. I was working for a custom publisher, and
Okay.
one of our biggest contracts was Travel Oregon, which
Okay.
is the Department of Tourism. So I was getting sent all over the state 6 weeks out of the year to drink beer and eat
Yeah.
chocolate and go for hikes and meet the goats. Like, it was
Right.
so fun, but
Okay.
it really it's and I got to write about everything that's happening in Oregon. But at the end of that, maybe how long did I do that? Maybe 4 years. I realized, oh, I really want to be at home. Like, I love being at home, and I want to write more, and I can't r make room for my own writing when I'm writing full time for somebody else. So I went back to freelance, which was
Okay.
because oh, that's the golden ticket, have more time. Went back to freelance, and that's when almost immediately the Music of Bees began. And it just came to me. Like, the first line came to me when I was driving the car, and I just sat down every morning for 12 weeks and wrote it till I was like, okay, this is turning into something. This is going to go somewhere.
You know, I'll tell you, I was talking to my wife about this. I've had my plans. my stupid, useless plans that I've had. But I said, there's nothing I trust more than when something comes to me and yes. I go, ooh, and then I follow it and obey it and, you know, do what it wants, because all my machinations have led to nothing. But every time I get a little inspired thought, there's nothing better, is there?
No, and that instinct, we all have it, and we've neglected it. We've neglected it because we're leaning on technology and our public opinion, and, our own minds. Yeah, but it's really a powerful thing when it just says, this is the thing. And when that happened, actually, I was in the car. I was going to pick up some bees because I'm a beekeeper. And I knew
careful with them. They get stingy. I'm sorry. All I can think of other beekeepers, like, oh my God, those buzzing. All right. Anyway, we can
talk about bees,
but you love them, obviously.
But honey is great. Yeah. So I was driving to go get the bees, and I got this sentence. I got the first sentence of the novel, which is Jacob Stevenson had the tallest mohawk in the history of Hood River Valley High School. And I knew from my experience as a reporter and an essay writer, and maybe you do too, when that happens, when that comes to you and you don't pull over and write it down, you're doomed. You're not going to remember it. You're going to think you remember it. You won't remember it.
So I've never done that. I've never written that stuff down. Maybe I've lost some great stories.
You probably have.
Oh, no. Forgot.
So, yeah, write it down.
You know what? It's, I write music, and I have to be, when the music, if I hear the, I got to go right away and play it out. So same thing, maybe. Yeah.
What kind of music do you write?
Like, well, I did classical stuff for a while, but now I write like songs, you know, singer-songwriter stuff. So
you sing as well.
I do. Listeners to this know the journey with me and my voice have taken, where I'm now confident enough to do that. But yeah, I
see. You have a nice voice. You have a great speaking voice.
Speaking voice is one thing. Thank you. I've always had confidence in that, but singing, but no, I can, I found I can sing to my own surprise and delight. I know. It's really nice. So, okay. Nature seems to have played a place in your stories. Oregon. There are places in Oregon that are not so naturey, but a lot of Oregon is. And that's true of the most recent one, maybe even more so. Is that accidental? Does it just happen? My brother once said, I wrote a bunch of poems. My brother said, there's a lot of crows in your poems. I said, well, there's a lot of crows out in my backyard. So I think that's why they're there.
Right. I don't think it's accidental. I love the Pacific Northwest. I love the outdoors. I take great comfort in being out in the woods. I find it very calming. And you're right that there was a lot of nature in the setting in the Music of Bees, and more so in Crow Talk, because Crow Talk, the Music of Bees takes place in Hood River, my fictionalized version of Hood River, in town mostly. But Crow Talk takes place at a lake, fictional lake at the foot of Mount Adams. It's a fairly remote place, so it's a little more contained in terms of where the action happens. So there's much more, I think I leaned even much more into the natural world there. And the way that happened was that I decided to write the book in a different way than the Music of Bees came to me. How to Be a Sister, I was carrying these stories around with Crow Talk. I thought, I want to write another novel. How do I get started? And in May of 2020, I turned in the final revision of the novel to my editor. And then we had everything close here. I don't know if that happened in Seattle, but
the national parks, state parks, county parks,
city parks, everything closed because of all the reasons we know. And I was very realizing how much the natural world was a comfort to me, and it was part of my mental health plan. So it's gone now. So I had a chance to, I grew up in Spokane, Washington, and my family had a cabin on Lake Coeur d'Alene, and we still own it. And I knew I could get there without interacting with anybody. So I went there, and the relief at being in this beautiful, familiar place under the trees, and this rainstorm was happening when I got there, just really stuck with me. So a year later, when I sat down to write the Crow Talk, that's what I began with. What if I took people with some problems, because I love the problems.
Gotta have them.
And I put them at this remote, beautiful location. And what might happen if they interact with each other, and how might this natural setting help them heal in the same way that I've found solace and comfort in nature.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting listening to this, because I think that it's important for artists, and I think just people in general, to understand the arc of the way we come up with ideas, which is, yes, sometimes you've been carrying stories around, you're dying to tell them. And yes, sometimes you get something which just bango comes to you. I had something like that with me where I literally just jumped up out of my chair and said, you know, and it became a really formative. But I think that there's the next level, which is saying, how do I invite it in? How do I, how do I notice something that's not a big pulsing light that I've got to do that can become just as meaningful? And it sounds like, because you can't sit around waiting for that bolt of lightning all the time. I don't think it keeps coming like that necessarily. Does that make sense?
I don't think so. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And when I was writing the music of Bees, nobody knew what I was doing. So I didn't have any pressure.
Right.
I didn't know, they could have thought I might as well be in here watching Netflix for hours on end. But then you have a book out in the world and people start asking you what's next. And then you ask yourself, and if you want to be a working writer, which is so fun, how do you invite the next project in? You can't force it. I'm sure you know that too.
No.
When you try, it just falls to pieces. So it is an interesting question, how to cultivate the mindset to allow.
Thank you. It's all the mindset. That's what I teach, is the mindset of writing. I don't teach the craft really, but the mindset of writing. And one of the, because I write essays, I've written thousands of them, where, and I do one or two a week now. And I did five a week for a while. I know. Wow. But so I sit down with nothing.
Yes.
But what I find, so I sit there and say, well, what? Mine are only like 400 or 500 words. They're short, but still, right? And so I say, well, what's been floating around? And it's usually around creativity. And then what I wait for, and I'm sure the same is true for you, at least just in 40 words, that one thing, like I know where I'm going to start. Oh, I'll start talking about that thing that happened to me. Whatever. But it's the first sentence that I didn't predict that is surprising, that is a new, then I'm on my way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The discovery, the little piece of little dash of inspiration. And then I'm excited. And then it might as well be a bolt of lightning. You know, right. It's the same difference. But I've learned that if I sit there and get a little interested in just the tiniest thing, it's like a fire that builds if I let myself focus on it. And it sounds like that's what I was flashing on as you were describing the latest novel, that you kind of did. You had a feeling you liked and then wanted to explore it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And like I think what you're saying, you have to be available and be curious. And
you can't,
and it helps to form patterns where you're sitting down every day at the same time.
Yes, you are speaking my language. Very good.
And setting boundaries with your loved ones.
Yes. Oh my God. It's like you've taken my classes. I love it.
I know. I haven't taken your class, but I was reading about them online. And yet absolutely we have lots in common here. I totally support your theories. But that I think is the hardest thing for people, especially women, I think, to learn is to say.
Totally. I don't like to draw a distinction between men and women a lot, but when it comes to writing, women and because I deal with the emotional challenges and I deal with a lot of women closing that door. My wife does not have trouble closing that door. Now, of course, she has a husband who's a writer, so he told me it doesn't matter. But that's a problem. It's hard for women. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for good reasons, in part because they understand the value of caring for people. There is tremendous value in caring for people, but God help you, you've got to close the door because they're going to go away at some point.
And it takes a while. It's like training a puppy.
Yes.
But eventually people get it. And sometimes you have to do, have you read Melissa Urban's book, the Book of Boundaries or the Boundaries book? I can't remember what it's called.
Uh-uh.
Anyway, she's the woman who did the Whole 30, and she talks about setting boundaries. And you start, you know, there's green, there's yellow, and there's red. And sometimes when we are new to setting boundaries, everything comes across as red. But
right. No, it's true. It's true. Yeah.
But anyway, and making time for it and honoring it and encouraging your household to respect the boundary.
And, you know, because here's the thing. If you said, this is why it's tricky for writers in particular. Now, you're a professional writer at this juncture. And so you can use that cudgel of like, hey, this is the money. But you got to do it before the money. Mm-hmm. You got to do it. Somebody say, I like this. I love it. Yes. And for a lot of people, it's hard just to let themselves do something simply because they love it if they don't know they're going to make any money off of it.
Right. You know? But it's good for you. I think
that's the
tact I would encourage people. And I think that might be more accessible to people these days. It's mental health. So
there you go.
It's happiness. It's centering. So think of it like your yoga or whatever.
Yes. As I always say, The thing I connect to when I write is the thing I seek connection to 24 hours a day. It's just where I can do it on purpose is when I write, you know, or talk to people like you. Also, that's another way I find it. So, oh, I do love when people agree with me. There's nothing so gratifying.
Happy to oblige.
Yeah, oh, thank you. But it's you know what's nice about it, actually, aside from, is that I think there is something universal about the creative process that we all have to connect into, you know, about doing it at the same, I think it's really good to do it at the same place. But you don't have to, but certainly you got to get curious. You have to close the door. You have to be alone. You have to be alone with yourself, with your own interests. And there is something, there is a common language that we all speak as creative people, I think.
I agree.
And so, okay, well, Eileen, fingers crossed. I hope this is an even bigger hit than The Language of Bees. And I hope also that you're already toying with the next book. Usually that's the way it goes with writers, but I don't know. Is that, don't tell me anything about it, but is there something cooking?
Yes, there's something cooking. Yes.
Of course. There's always something. Good. All right. But not quite done with you.
Okay.
So again, people, Crow Talk, it's out today. Get it. Where all fine books are sold. You're going to love it. Go get it. But, have Eileen to your, have her to your book club. Look at her. She's so sweet. She'd be great. She's funny. She's honest. You'll love it. So have her in your book club. But before I let you go, I want you to think about all the writing you've done, even the journalism, even your academic writing when you thought you were going to be a PhD.
Yes.
If it's taught you anything about being a human being, it's taught you what?
If it's taught me anything about being a human being, it's taught me to pay attention.
Yeah,
I think in every level of the writing I've done, especially reporting, essay writing, memoir to fiction, paying attention to people, what they're saying, how they're holding themselves, all the detail, the natural world, what's happening around. Just like, I feel like I'm like collecting data whenever I'm just, it changes the way you are in the world. When you decide to become a writer, it changes the way you operate so that when you're at the airport, you're not just annoyed that you're waiting for your flight. You're looking at people around you and, oh, look at that person over there. They look like they're having a tough time with their kid and that guy's laughing. You're just, it's a way to be in the world.
Yeah. It really asks you to be present in a way, sort of, you just naturally start doing it in a way you wouldn't otherwise.
I agree.
Yeah. Eileen, thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pay attention, people. Pay attention. Writing asks us to do it. It's good. Be present. What's really there? Don't be in your head. Well, look at writers. We spend some time in our head, but listen, it's good sometimes to look around, notice the world. What's it really like? Yeah. Listen, thank you, my friend RJ Jeffries, my producer. I want to thank all of you for listening. And so until next time, look around. Notice what you love. Notice what you like. And then go find something you love to do and do it.